Morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra's Kuf Ches. Finishing up just a little bit that we have to go in terms of finishing the parak, the sixth parak, and then we begin the finishing the seventh parak, and then starting the eighth parak of Masechta this morning. Let's just quickly go back to the Mishnah that we saw yesterday. The Mishnah at the very end of the seventh parak spoke about selling half your field. I'm selling half my field. So you do an appraisal. And the person, the buyer, is going to take half the field. As we already pointed out yesterday, what's the correct pshat in the Mishnah? Rabbi Yochanan is firmly of the opinion that correct pshat in the Mishnah is you don't give them the half of the field, which is actually half linearly, geographically, but you give half the field, meaning that you appraise the field, and whatever is half the value is what you're going to give him. So it could be that what you're going to give him happens to be a lot more land, but in terms of value, is equivalent to the other half of the field. And why would you do that? You would want to give him more of inferior land and keep for yourself more of the superior land. So that's the Shuma, that's the appraisal that's mentioned in the Mishnah. And we said the same thing is true, even as the Mishnah identifies Chetzi Badarim, half in the south. So then, what's there a Shuma? Why is there a Shuma over here? So it's the same basic idea. Even though we've identified somewhere in the south, but still, an appraisal can be made, appraisal is going to be made, and Yad HaMochel Al-Yon is what the Rashbam used, the expression Rashbam used yesterday. Meaning that over here, because again, the exactly which land it was being sold as nondescript, and so the mocher can make these kind of executive decisions in terms of which property in particular is going to be given over to the seller. And then the Mishnah ended off with a line which we didn't explain, which we're going to do right now, and that is that he accepts upon himself to provide a place for the fence and for a charitz, a groove in the ground, and a ben charitz and a small groove in the ground. The kamu charishi shetfachim, that groove in the ground is going to be six tfachim, and the ben charitz and the son of the charitz, the little charitz, is going to be shlosh, it's going to be three. Okay, so that's what we mentioned yesterday, that when you sell property, make sure to also include enough room for a fence and for two kind of buffering areas. Each one of them is a some sort of right. From the seller's property. One of them is a larger groove, and the other one is a smaller groove. Tana, the Gemara, we are picking it up right here. Mekabalav makum geder v'chulei. It's the last line of Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. Tana, Gemara quotes a brisa. Charitz mi b'chutz ben charitz mi b'fnim. The charitz is more exterior, and the ben charitz is more interior. However, zevazeh acharei geder, but the purpose of both of them is to put him past the fence. Kedesh lo teichaya kofetzes, and the reason why you're doing so is that the animals don't jump the fence. So the Gemara says, so you have now the charitz and the ben charitz. The charitz is going to be even more exterior. The ben charitz is going to be more interior, and the purpose of having both of them is so that no animals jump the fence. Okay, now
they're both outside the fence.
That's what it sounds like. So the Gemara says, okay, so I think I kind of get it, says the Gemara, but why the need for both? Meaning, so you have a groove and you have a smaller groove. So the Gemara says, okay, so let's have one and not the other. So the Gemara says, charitz, I did the
One big one.
It was just one big one, that's it. So the Gemara says, ben ravach. So the Gemara says, well, the charitz is very wide. As we already established, it's six fachim wide. It's a full amma wide. So now, if I were to make a... If I would just make one big one, so I did the ravach, kaim begavevikavta. So then what the animal is going to do is the animal is actually going to go into the groove, which is six fachim wide, and jump from there over the fence. V'lavid ben charitz, v'lavid charitz. So the Gemara says, okay, so the ben charitz is not as manageable. You can't negotiate the ben charitz. So the Gemara says, okay, so just make the ben charitz and don't make the big one. So the Gemara says, I did the cut and kaima asafsevikavte. So the Gemara says, well, if it's a small one, what the animal could do is kind of like reach over with its neck and with its lips kind of grab onto the fence and jump the fence in that manner. So basically now the double ditch
a larger ditch and the smaller ditch is a more of an assurance that the animal won't jump the fence. The Kama ben Charitz, ben Charitz Tefach, and then the Gemara concludes by simply pointing out that there is going to be a small space between the big ditch and the little ditch. If there's no space, so then the big ditch and the little ditch just simply become one big ditch. So obviously there needs to be some sort of space between them. The Gemara says Tefach, it's a one Tefach space that's going to exist between the big ditch and the little ditch. Hadron Lach Beis Kor, that is the end of the of the seventh parak of our Masechta. I don't know. It's a reasonable question. I don't know. Okay. We turn to Parshas Pinchas. We're about to start the eighth parak of the Masechta. We are changing gears in terms of topic of discussion. There has been a pretty solid, steady, singular topic of discussion that has been taking the attention of the Gemara for the last four Prakim, meaning through Prakims 4, 5, 6, and 7, and that's Mechira, and that's sale. And we talked about the sale of pretty much everything under the sun, or everything, you know, a little bit old-fashioned under the sun, but we talked about the sale of everything. Wagons, boats, cars. Wagons, boats, cars, land, fruit, and anything that was a commodity that was involved in the transaction. So we discussed that. We really just spelled out the details of what is generically included in the sale and what is generically not included in the sale. What languages mean what in contract law? And that has been the topic of discussion now for some time in Baba Basra. As we now we enter into the eighth parak and we're about to start the eighth parak. So really, what we are. What we are discussing right now is Nachla, the mitzvah in the Torah of inheritance. So where does it come up? It comes up first in Parshas Pinchas. So in Parshas Pinchas, Perch of Zion, so it starts off with a narrative, and then that is Benot Slavchan. So the daughters of Slavchan, who ultimately is a descendant of Menashe, who is obviously a descendant of Yosef. So in other words, receiving Yerusha Sa'aretz, but they have a very serious complaint, and that is that their father died in the desert, and the he wasn't a member of Korach, and what's going to happen now to his inheritance? Meaning, we are five daughters, there are no sons, so what's going to happen? The Lama Yigara, by the way, it's... it couldn't get any better, meaning today's Pesach Sheni. So that's the language of Lama Yigara is also the same language employed when relating to Pesach Sheni. Anyway, works out beautifully that way. So Lama Yigara, so why should we lose out? Shem Avinu Mitoch Mishpachto. Like, we shouldn't lose out. Like, what's going to happen to our father's inheritance? Ki ein lo ben tanala achuza besocha cheavinu. So he didn't have a son, meaning we don't have a brother, so what's going to happen? So v'yakrib Moshe es mishpatam lefnei Hashem. So Moshe at that point says, that's a good question. Let me consult. Moshe Rabbeinu had a clear advantage over other Rabbanim in terms of who he consulted with. So anyway, v'yamar Hashem Moshe lemor. So now we move on, and the Torah then begins to discuss the halachas of Yerusha. So I'm going to go through the psukim, and the psukim are, we're going to keep coming back to these psukim again and again. So they're extraordinarily important just to have a correct discussion in terms of the eighth parak. So let's familiarize yourself with the psukim, and this will not be the first time that we're going to cite these psukim. So came benot slavchas dovros. So they're right. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Nason titein lahem achuzas nachala. So they get nachla, they get some sort of inheritance. B'socha cheavihem, amongst the brothers of their father. V'avartas nachlas avihem lahem. And what's going to happen is that the inheritance is going to pass over to them. V'al b'nei Yisrael tzedabei lemor. And this is now what you're going to instruct the Jewish people. And that is, ish ki amosu v'nein lo, that when a person dies, he doesn't have a son, v'avartam as nachlas olavito. That what happens is it then goes to the daughter. V'imein lo bas, now if there's no daughter, satam as nachlas ola echav. So then it goes to the brothers. V'imein lo achim, now if there's no brothers, and satam as nachlas ola achei aviv. So then it goes to the uncles. V'imein achim la aviv, now if there are no uncles, paternal uncles, meaning your father's brother. So then it goes to the next closest relative. And he's going to inherit it. meaning the Nachla, Vaisal of Neisol, the Chukas Mishpat, Kashir Tziva Hashem as Moshe. And these are the laws of the inheritance. So, that's it. We've covered the parsha in the Torah that discusses the laws of inheritance. From the Torah, what does the order sound like? So, it's very clear, actually, from the Torah. We're going to change it a little bit as we go through the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara, and for reasons which we're going to explain. Obviously, that's going to require an explanation, but in terms of the Torah, so the order... the order seems to be pretty clear. At first, the Yerusha goes down to the son. If there's no son, then it goes to the daughter. And if there's no daughter, then it goes to the brothers. If there are no brothers, so then it goes to the uncle. And if there are no uncles, so then it goes to the closest relative. Okay, notably absent from...
Grandchildren.
Yes, correct. No, agreed. Notably absent from the list in the Torah. Yeah, all right. Well, wife only because, as we're going to learn today, wife doesn't inherit.
Right.
Well, so that makes sense why that one's not absent. Right. What is notably absent? What's notably absent, as David points out, is the father. Meaning, the father's going to inherit. And where is the father in the succession, in the line of order? So, stay tuned. Meaning, that's coming up right now. Okay. So, just as a brief introduction to the Perek, so the Psukim and Parshas Pinchas. And now let's begin. The Mishnah, as it is wont to do, the Mishnah gives us categories. The Mishnah really, really enjoys organizing information and providing categories. And so what our Mishnah provides for us are four different categories of familiar relationships. Number one, Yesh Nochlam Amanchilin. So sometimes inheritance is a two-way street. So in other words, there is nachla. Nachla means you are the recipient, you are going to inherit. Umanchilin is that you are the one who is benefacting, you're the one who's giving. So sometimes you can have a relationship where it goes in both directions, meaning we are related and it can go that if I predecease you, so I'll be manchil to you, you will be nochla me. If you predecease me, so then the other way around. So then you're going to be bequeathing to me and I'll inherit it from you. You'll be manchel and I'll be nochel. So we can have a familiar relationship where it goes two ways. Okay, again, all the details are going to be filled out. We're just right now presenting the categories. Yesh nochelam manchilim. Yesh nochelam v'lo manchilim. Sometimes it's a one-way street and a one-way street in that I can only receive, but I cannot be a benefactor. I'll get from you if you predecease me, but you won't get from me if I predecease you. Manchilim v'lo nochelam. Also, there's another one-way street, and that is where our relationship is such where if I predecease you, I'm going to be with you, but I will not inherit you. Okay. Lo nochlin v'lo manchilin. And there's a kind of relationship where it's a no-way street. It's a dead end. Okay, sorry. The analogy just officially ran. The analogy just ran out. Anyway, lo nochlin v'lo manchilin, and that is nothing. In other words, even though we're related, but there will not be any Yerusha in either direction, neither from me to you or from you to me. Okay, ve'elo nochlin u'manchilin. So, okay, now that we have the category, so now we have to fill in the details. Who's where? So, in terms of nochlin manchilin ha'av is abanim va'abanim es ha'av. So now that goes to father-son. Father-son is the kind of relationship where it can go in either direction. If the father predeceases the son, the father will be manchil to the son. Under certain circumstances, if the son predeceases the father, the Yerusha will go from son to the father. So now this is the kind of relationship where it can go in both directions. Ha'achin mina'av nochlin manchilin. Additionally, says the Mishnah, you can have paternal brothers. Now we're going to keep repeating this again and again. It's just we'll get familiar with this. And that is, it's going to only be paternal brothers. It's not maternal brothers. Maternal brothers, from a Yerusha standpoint, are not related. Meaning, obviously, they are siblings for other areas of halacha, but vis-a-vis Yerusha, they are not related, and therefore there is not going to be any Yerusha being passed if they are just maternal brothers. Paternal brothers, however, they're sharing the same father, so there is going to be Yerusha between the two of them. So, ha'achim and ha'av nochlin manchilin. So here's a scenario where, once again, under certain circumstances, it can go in both directions. If one brother predeceases another, so then it could be he'll be manchil to the other brother. And at the same time, well, not the same time, that's impossible, but if the other brother were to predecease this brother, so then it can go the other direction as well. So these these are two examples, father, son, and paternal brothers, where the Yerusha can go in either direction. Ha'ish es imo, v'ha'ish es ish, I'm sorry, did I skip a little bit? So again, so they go in both directions, period. Okay, and adkan, that is category number one. Category number two. Category number two is where we are... manchilin, I'm sorry, nochlin velo manchilin, where you're going to be able to inherit, but you're not going to be able to bequeath. You won't be a benefactor. The elu, I'm sorry, the Mishnah doesn't start off with a heading over here. Ha'ish es imo, v'ha'ish es ishto, uvnei. Now the next word in the Mishnah, we have it as achayos. I'll explain in just a moment that probably that girsa needs a little bit of adjustment. I'll explain that in just a moment. Nochlin v'lo manchilin. So these are scenarios where it's only going to be working in one direction. And that is, you're only going to be able to inherit, but you cannot benefact. So that means that let's say a woman dies and she has a child. So her child, her son, is going to inherit her. Ha'ish es imo, v'ha'ish es ishto. And the same thing is going to be true regarding a man and his wife. Meaning, if his wife predeceases him, he'll inherit his wife. And then b'nei achayos. Again, I'm going to explain that better in just a moment. Nochlin v'lo manchilin. These three scenarios, so it only goes in one direction, not in the other direction. Meaning, if the son predeceases his mother, so his mother will not inherit him. Who will inherit him? So anyone on dad's side. Meaning, well, first, if he has children, then his children. And if he doesn't have children, so then we go to the paternal side. In the case of a husband and wife, same story. If the husband predeceases the wife, so she does not inherit him. Meaning that it's going to go... Right, the ksuva is just simply an IOU. But in terms of inheritance, so the estate is going to go to either his children, if he doesn't have children. So once again, we'll articulate later on the order of succession. I know we read the Pesukim in the Torah, but as you will see later on, the order of succession is going to be slightly different than the way the Torah presents it. Now, there is a third, in this category number two, there's a third example that's given. And what is that third example that's given? So, b'nei achayos. So here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the Rashbam. I'm going to read the Rashbam of v'lo manchilin, dira amaschal v'lo manchilin. It's a long Rashbam. And I'm just going to cut to the second half of this Rashbam. It is the first words in the line with lamed alf lishna achrina, where the Rashbam is going to give what he believes is his preferred pshat over here. So we're in category number two, third example, and I'm reading the second half of the Rashbam. I know that's extraordinarily specific. But but what is this now third example of where it only goes in one direction? Notably, you will then be able to inherit them, but they will not be able to inherit you. So who is that? Lishna achrina ubnei achos. So the way the Rashbam reads the Mishnah, now he did try to read it the way we have it, which is b'nei achayos, which is the sons of your sister, but the Rashbam says, I'd rather read it b'nei achos. B'nei achos shel Reuven. And that is going to be the sons of the daughter, sorry, the son of the sister of Reuven, Kigon. So here we're going to give examples. And the Rashbam, as he does throughout this parak, gives examples using the Shvatim. Right? So it's nice. I'm assuming, you know, we all know, you know, who's related to whom. But Kigon. B'nei Dina Nochlin Oso. So the daughters of Dina. Sorry. The sons of Dina. So B'nei Dina Nochlin Oso. Sharei Dina Yoreshes Es Reuven. Achia Uvana Bain Mikocha. Dina will be Yoresh Reuven, Acheha Uvana Bain Mikocha. So her brothers and her sons come as a result of her strength. Avalo Manchilin Le Reuven, but will not be able to be bequeathed towards Reuven. Shari Reuven Mikoch Achoso. Dina Bali Rash Osan Vaha Hello Dina Atzma Ein Yurashtan. Dina herself is not going to be a Yorish, Kedamrina Daha'im Eino Nochalas Espina. Mother does not bequeath to her son. Ella Krove Bala Shaldina Yorshin Espaneha. But rather, The husband of Dina is going to inherit. So the Rashbam says, I think this is a preferred shot. So in other words, Rashbam, way he understands the third case of the Mishnah, the third example of the Mishnah, in category number two, of those who are able to inherit but not to bequeath, is going to be the your nephews, meaning your sister's children. Your sister's children. So they're going to be able to inherit from you, but they will not be able to be manchel. They won't bequeath to you. And the Rashbam says, I think this is a preferred pshat mishum. And the Rashbam explains why. Diktani seifa. Now, we didn't get to category number three yet in the Mishnah, meaning the examples of category number three. But you will see, though, that in category number three, it's very simple. Meaning category three, number three is just simply the mirror image of all the examples in category number two. Diktani seifa, Aisha's benav, Aisha's ba'ala. We talk about a woman and her son, a woman and her husband, ve'achei ha'em. And the brothers of the mother, manchilin, they bequeath v'lo nochlin. Okay, now v'chol hanach tasa shamin and lehum hanach tlas. Meaning, and the Rashbam points out, what are those three examples? They are the mirror image of the three examples in category number two. Dahach bava denochlin v'lo manchilin kedamrina b'gemara. Dahaino hach. In fact, the Gemara is going to note that really, category number two, category number three, are just simply the same thing, just simply the life from the other side of the lens, meaning it's the same example, just from the other side. So, if category number three and category number two are just simply the same thing, just from the different perspective, so then, if we establish that category number three is talking about your mother's brother, so clearly, category number two is going to be your sister's children. Okay. So, b'nei achos, da'hinu namida achayim, manchilens ben achosam v'lo nochlim. So, okay, and therefore, the Rashbam says that he prefers the girsa of b'nei achos, the sons of the sister. Okay. The Rashbam does give another pshat, which I didn't read. The Rashbam clearly prefers this pshat. We will stay with this particular pshat. Okay, back to the Mishnah.
Assuming that Reuben had no children.
Right, correct. You're right. Right, that's absolutely correct. B'nei achai es nochlim v'lo manchilin. Ha'isha es b'neha, a woman to her children. Va'isha es ba'ala, ve'achei ha'am, ve'achei ha'em, manchilin v'lo nochlin. So in these three examples, so we are going to be able to bequeath, but not going to be able to inherit. So a mother is not going to be able to inherit her from her sons. She'll be able to bequeath to her sons, she'll be a benefactor to her sons, but she will not be able to inherit. Nor a wife to her husband, nor the uncle. The uncle will not be able to inherit. The uncle meaning on mom's side. V'lo nochlin. And finally, ha'achin min ha'im, lo nochlin v'lo manchilim. And paternal brothers, so even though they are related, even though they're brothers, but from a Yerusha standpoint, zero, nothing. There's no nachla, there's no manchil, they're not inheriting, they're not bequeathing, neither direction does it work out. Okay, Adkan. Okay, so what we've so far established in the Mishnah is that in terms of Yerusha, we could break it down to four categories of where you have certain familiar relationships where it's a two-way street, where you can both have a scenario in which you can either inherit from them or bequeath to them, obviously depending on who predeceases whom. We can have a scenario in which you can inherit from them but not bequeath to them. You can have a scenario in which you'll bequeath to them but you won't be able to inherit from them. And finally, neither, even though you're related, even though you're mishpach, your family, but I'll see you next year's Pesach Seder. But there's not going to be any Yerusha in either direction. Okay, we start with the Gemara. Maishan diktani aves habanim bereisha, lisne habanim es haav bereisha. So, what bothers the Gemara over here is just simply stylistically, where did the Mishnah start? Meaning, obviously, we're talking about Yerusha. Wouldn't it make most sense to start in a place where it's most normal or most natural? Meaning, where is Yerusha classically found? It's found where the father dies and his sons inherit. When you look at the Mishnah, and you look at the opening of the Mishnah, that's not where we start. We start with the Elu Nochlin Manchilin Ha'av Es Banim. Dad's going to inherit the sons. Meaning that the son predeceases the father and dad inherits. Now that's true, But why would the Mishnah open up there? It's a strange place for the Mishnah to open up, and this is exactly what bothers the Gemara. The Gemara, Maisha Ditani Aviz Banim Beresha. Lizzi Abanim Asav Beresha. Chada, the Gemara says, look, it would make a lot more sense for the Mishnah to open up with what classically happens, and that is the son inherits the father. And the Gemara starts off by saying, number one, Aschule Bipurinas Olamaschalinan. Meaning, in other words, obviously we're going to be very clinical about this entire discussion in our Gemara. Meaning, clearly, it's, you know, it's emotional, but we're going to be very clinical about it. Why? But even if we're going to be clinical about it, why would the Mishnah open up with a case that is unnatural? Meaning, and not only is it unnatural, it's puranasa. It's something which is devastating. Where you have a scenario where the son dies, the son had no children, and the father now is going to inherit the son. So really, it's twofold. Number one, the father unfortunately sees the death of his own son. Two, is that the son died having no sons of his own. So why would the Mishnah start off over there? Again, true, the father inherits the son, but why would the Mishnah start over there? That's Puranasa. And we don't like to open up that way. Two, says the Mishnah, we're now on the top of Kufches Amud Beis, Kidichsiv, Ish Ki Amosu Bein Ein Lo. Look where the Torah starts. Meaning the Torah starts where a man dies and he doesn't have a son. So clearly from the Torah assumes that the normal circumstance would be where a person dies and he has a son. Where the Torah now immediately, not immediately, but the Torah turns to, here's now plan B, in the event that he doesn't have a son. But clearly, plan A is generally a person dies and he has a son. So really, it's one question, but a couple components to the question. Why would our Mishnah open up with the father inheriting his son when meanwhile, that is a tragedy? Why would the Mishnah start there? And number two, even as the Torah introduces us to the halachas of Yerusha, the Torah clearly operates with the assumption that a father is going to have his own child, and that the Yerusha is going to pass from the father to his own son. And in the event that he doesn't have his own son, so then we take it from there. So what is happening that the Mishnah is starting off with a father inheriting his son's estate? So the Gemara's explanation goes as follows. The Tana, as far as our Mishnah is concerned, Aidi de Asyele Midrasha Chavivale. So the Gemara says, well, as far as a father inheriting a son, we don't know that from the Pesukim. Now, earlier this morning, we went through the Pesukim inside. And we noted that there's nowhere in the Pesukim that it says that the father inherits his son. What does that come from? It comes from a drasha, which we're going to explain what the drasha is in just a moment. And we've heard this before in the Gemara, and now we're hearing it again, the beginning of the 8th parak of Baba Basra, and that is that when we have something that comes through a drasha, chaviva, it's beloved, meaning that we have a certain attachment to it, meaning that we have a very basic assumption that there are two parts of the Torah, Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebapeh, and to show our affinity and our connection to the Torah Shebapeh, sometimes we will put cases in the Torah Shebapeh in front of the Torah Shebichsav to show how connected and attached we are to the Torah Shebapeh. So the Gemara says, so since this halacha of a father inheriting a son is Torah Shebapeh, it's learned out through a drasha, and it's not based on Pashup Shah and the Psukim, that's why the Mishnah opted to put it first, even though it's not normal, it's not natural, it is a tragedy, where the son predeceases his father, but the halacha is learned out through a drasha, therefore comes first. Umay drasha detanya. So the Gemara says, so where's the drasha? So it comes out from the following. It's a braisa. Now, again, I know I went through the psukim once before, but let's just quickly recap on these psukim. They're really important, especially as we now are approaching the drasha. So Parashas Pinchas, Perek of Zion, Vel Bnei Yisrael Tadaber. I'm starting in Pasuk Ches. Vel Bnei Yisrael Tadaber Lemor, Ish Kiamus Uvein Ein Lo. So a person dies and doesn't have a son. Vavarta Masnach Chasol Levito, so it goes to the daughter. Okay. Now, if there's no daughter, so then it goes to his sons. I'm sorry, to his brothers. Okay. Now, if the deceased does not have brothers, surviving brothers, so then you give it to his uncles. Now, if he doesn't have uncles, you give it to the next closest relative. Now, it is very fair to say that the next closest relative is going to be, meaning, who is notably absent in this list? So clearly, his father. So
the father is even closer than the uncle.
Right. And Danny points out, and that's absolutely it's a good point, and it's an accurate point, meaning that in the gauging of who is a closer relative, it's very easy to put dad in front of the uncles. We can make an argument. Not only can we make an argument, we are going to make an argument that dad is closer to other relatives as well. So, for example, if I were to say dad versus the person died and he survived by father or brothers, who's closer? Right? You can make a compelling argument that dad's closer to that of the brothers. Let me do one more. Let's say survived by a daughter and a father. Who's closer? Okay, obviously we're not talking about emotional attachment. We're talking about, you know, halacha, and where does the Torah gauge them in terms of who comes in front of whom? Okay, so meaning, and by the way, we're going to answer that question in a little bit. But clearly, dad, who is absent from the list, and it only begs the question, why did the Torah not put dad there in the list? Okay, that it deserves some sort of answer. But for our purposes right now, clearly he belongs there. It's just a question of where does he belong? And that's what we're going to be discussing right now. So again, let's go back to the Gemara Darshans. So Umay Drasha Detanya She'iro Zeha'av. So encrypted in the Torah, even though it's not explicitly mentioned over there, is dad. Where is he? He is in the term She'iro, meaning, and whoever is the closer relative. So that's dad. So Zeha'av Malamit She'av Kodem La'achin. And where are we going to put him in the depth chart? So the Brisa says that we're going to put him right in front of the brothers. Okay, Yachol Yeh Kodem Leven. Now the Gemara says, well, maybe the Gemara is entertaining the idea that maybe we're going to put him even in front of the son. It's even as a Havamina. That's very strange, but again, you know, once dad now is an official wild card, meaning we don't know where he fits in. We know he's there. We know he belongs. We know he's part of the line of succession.
Why do you know that?
Right. Right. That's fair. Right. All I know is that we know. Meaning, I don't have an excellent support to that, but I know it's there. Meaning, the Gemara is assuming that. The Bryce is assuming it's there.
It's understood.
It's understood. Meaning, why is that an assumption? It's a very good question. But it is an assumption. So he's there. So now that I know that he's there, and I know he's a wild card because the Torah doesn't tell us where to put him, so now, as a wild card, it's fair to ask. So where does he fit in? He comes in before the surviving brothers, meaning his very own sons. Gemara says, fine. Maybe he comes in before the deceased's own son. Gemara says, no, we're not going to go. That far, we're not going to go. So, Yachli, Yeh Kodem Leven, maybe he should come before the sons. No, Tamalomer, Ha Karov. Karov, Karov, Kodem. So the Gemara says, no, because there is an order of succession. And the order of succession demands that first the son, then the father. Now, again, right, it's to the most basic of questions, how do we know that? So Karov Karov. So take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam writes, Dibra Maskal Karov Karov, Lemes Yoser Hu Kodem Menachal Al Yosho. Who's ever closer comes first in the line of succession. Vaben Shomes Kigon Chanoch Ben Reuven Karov Hu Reuven Yoser Miyakov Aviv. Now, as far as the line of succession is concerned, so the son of the deceased is closer than the father of the deceased. So again, the Rashbam is going to be using our Shvatim as just simply a model of who we're discussing. So we're talking now about Reuven passing away, leaving, being survived by his father Yaakov and his son Chanoch. Again, we're just using these as examples. So, just simply because we're most familiar with this family line. So, Yosem Yaakov Aviv. Sharei Kam Tachas Aviv Li Yada Ulustei Achuzik Kedol Kaman. Now, what arguments are we going to make that his son is a closer relative than that of his father? So we're going to make halachic arguments. Now the Gemara itself is going to make them, and the Rashi here just makes quick mention of them, the halach of Yud and the halach of Steachuza. We're going to explain them a little bit better in just a couple minutes from now. Ava ha'av lo matzini she'kam tachas b'no l'klum. Halachically, where does the father replace his son? The answer is nowhere. Meaning there's no circumstances, there's no halachic circumstance where the father serves as a substitute for his son. We know that the son can serve as a substitute for the father, two halachas. Actually, there really is a third halacha, which, you know, if time allows, I'm going to go over later on. But there is no halachic area where a father serves as a substitute for a son. Parenthetically, do we have a halachic area where a brother is a substitution for his brother? Sure we do.
Yibum.
Okay, so umishum de milsa de pshita hu lo chasha shagamar lachshos uman reis l'rabos as a ben lahotzi esav ki hech de parak lekameh maris l'rabos as a ben lahotzi esach de bishla magabe ach hashkechan sheyesh korva shekam tachas echav liyibum. You see, when it comes to brothers, we do have a halachic construct in which a brother will serve as a substitute for his other brother. So later on, the Gemara is going to challenge brothers. Ava ba'av lo matzina klal. But we don't find anywhere in halacha where the father stands in for his son. Okay, so now, this is basically now the Gemara's point. We will not dare put the father in front of the son because it just doesn't make sense halachically. Meaning we don't find that, we can't make a cogent argument that the father is going to be any closer in relationship than that of the son. And again, the argument is going to be where we find in halacha many times the son stands in for the place of his father, but not the other way around. So we can't do that. So, but we are going to put a father in front of the brothers. Why should that be? That's what the Gemara is going to ask. Umari Israabos as a ben lahotzi as aach marba ani as a ben shekain kam tachas aviv liyado l'seachuza. So the Gemara says, now, we have included the son, meaning the son is going to go in front of dad, but not the brothers. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Marban is a ben shekin kam tachas avav liyad olos te'achuza. So as far as the son is concerned, so the son stands in for his father's place for two halachas, notably the halach of yid and the halach of te'achuza. Let's explain each one of them. Okay, and I'll do so with the Rashbam. Okay, Marban is a ben. Rashbam, he writes, Chanuch ben Reuven sheikam tachos avil l'nachla tfei mishimon achei Reuven. So as far as Chanuch, son of Reuven, he's going to come and take the place of his father, meaning inherit his father much quicker than Reuven's surviving brothers, notably Shimon. Sharei kam Chanuch tachos aviv Reuven, because in the event that Reuven dies, so his son fills in for him for the halacha of Yud. For example, Shimkan Reuven Ama Ivriya. Let's say, for example, Reuven purchases for himself a Jewish maidservant, right? A young Jewish woman. Okay, no, she's not yet a woman. So Ama Ivriya Yachol Li Yaada. So when you purchase an Ama Ivriya, so you could do a very specific mitzvah, and that is the mitzvah of Yud, which is marry her. In fact, we learned elsewhere that that's really what the goal should be. Meaning that when you're buying an Amma Yivriya, you should buy her for the purpose, for the goal of marriage. Kishi yirtza bekesav biknaso, shenasan la'aviyah, zeh yamim, ukvar nitnu lahotziyah. Ve'ein tzarech liten kedushin acherin, ela kachye amer. Meaning when you buy the Amma Yivriya, the money you use for the purchase ends up becoming the kesav kedushin. All you need to do from this point going forward is just simply say, "Hare at miu edes li." Kidichsiv imra'a b'enei Adonai asher lo ya'ada. Beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. In other words, the Torah assumes that what you will be doing is yud. And again, yud is just simply going to be the act of saying, "Hare at miu edes li." The money you already gave. Mechlal shi'achol ya'ada v'gam lav no ya'achol ya'ada. Now, in the event that the father does not want to do yud with this Amma Ivriya, so who can do it in his stead? His son. So, and the Rashbam points out, Livno yachol yada, kidechsiv im livno yi adena. Aval adam acher en yachol yada, elayim ken yikacheno ish kedushin gemurim, ve'afilo echav en yachol yada, and nobody else can perform this mitzvah of yud. Not the person's brothers and not anyone else. So you see that halachically, a son has a clear advantage over that of anyone else. Example number one. Example number two is Steachuza. Next Rashbam. Steachuza, the Darshin of Erechim, Beperkei Magdishin. So this is taken straight out of the Gemara in Erechim. Tanyanami Petoros Kohanim. And you can also find it in the Sifra as well. Vim lo Yigalas Asadda Ba'alav Sheikdisho. In other words, a person was Magdish an ancestral field. He consecrated it. and and now if the temple treasurer were to sell this land to somebody else, which he has every right to do, and ishacher means anyone other than the principal who consecrated it or the son of the principal who consecrated it. What happens now is that in the event that somebody else buys the field before Yovel, so then in the Yovel year, this is a rare example where the field does not return to its original owner, but rather who gets it? The Kohanim. It goes to the Kohanim in Yovel. And by the way, specifically the Kohanim who are serving in the Beis HaMikdash during the Yovel year. More specifically, the Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. Now, if it is redeemed by either the person who consecrated it or the son of the person who consecrated it, so then it's going to go back to the family. However, if any other family member redeemed the land, including the brother of the Makdish, so then it does not go back to the family. So once again, another clear area in halacha where the son serves as a substitute for the father. The son is not considered acher. Okay, and then the Rashbam goes on to explain more of the Gemara's discussion over there in Erchin. We have now two established halachas in the Torah where the son serves as a substitute for the father. So in the question of succession of Yerusha, so who is closest to the deceased? So the answer is halachically the son. We see two areas in halacha where the son is clearly an extension of the father. Back to the Gemara. Adarabba, the Gemara says just the opposite. Marbani esa achshe kain kam tachas aviv liyibam. The Gemara says, well, what about the brother? What about a surviving brother? If the issue is a question of substitution, and who can fill in for whom, we know that halachically, a brother can fill in for another brother, notably in the case of Yibam. So the Gemara says, klum yesh Yibam ela b'makm she'in ben, ha b'makm she'ish ben en Yibam. So the Gemara says, well, consider the following. Yes, a brother does serve as a substitute in Yibam. However, the Gemara says, that's only true if there is no surviving son. But in the event of a surviving son, meaning if a person dies and he has a son, so then there's no mitzvah of Yibam. So yes, it's true, a brother is a substitute and a stand-in, but we also clearly see that in the event that there's a son, so then the brother is not needed, not necessary.
It used to be that the father could also be
Yibam. Okay, that right, the history of Yibam. And you're right. But in other words, but the halachas of Yibam post Matan Torah is that it's only the only one who does a mitzvah of Yibam is only the brother. And again, that's only the case where there's no son. the Gemara says, Taima Dikai Pircha. So the Gemara says, fine. That's a reasonable question. Halav hachi hava min achadiv. But the Gemara says, without that pircha, so then a brother would have actually would have been preferred. So tepeklei dahacha. I'm sorry. So tepeklei dahacha tarti v'hacha chada. So the Gemara says. So what we should come out now is that we have vis-a-vis the son. You have two phenomena, two halachic phenomena, meaning notably Yud and Steachuza, and over here by the brother, you only have one. So in other words, the Gemara says, even if, meaning, the truth of the matter is by Yibam, you have a problem, a kasha. And that is that there's no Yibam in the event that there's a son. But even if we were just for a moment to ignore that, still, the son should come in front of the brother. The surviving child should come in, the surviving son should come in front of the surviving brother, being that surviving son has two halachic realities and the surviving brother only has one halachic reality. So the Gemara says, it's kind of a theoretical question. Why did we need the pircha even without the pircha? The son should come in front of the brother. So the Gemara says, "Steachuza gufa mehaytamuhu deka kaimale latana." Klum yesh yibam ela b'makam shein ba hayesh ben ein yibam. So the Gemara says, well, the truth of the matter is that Stei Achuza is just Noveya. It really comes through the Halacha of Yid. Meaning that Stei Achuza is not an independent argument. Stei Achuza is really dependent on the Yid argument. So it's not really two versus one. It's really one versus one. And so therefore, that's why we needed the Pircha. So we need to lean so heavily on the Pircha, because without the Pircha, it's not a question of two versus one, it's really a question of one versus one. And that's why the Pircha becomes so important, so necessary. Okay, let's just quickly recap. Where are we at right now? We're in the middle of a discussion. It's kind of a long sentence, and we'll finish it tomorrow, but let's just quickly recap what we have. Okay, we finished the seventh parak of the Masech, so we talked about animals jumping over the fence. But the main part of today's daf is the beginning of the eighth parak of Baba Basra. We talked about Nachala. There's a mitzvah in the Torah where, in the event that a person dies, so there's going to be a succession of order of who's going to inherit his estate. The first one who's going to inherit it is his son. In the event that there's no son, so then the daughter. In the event that there's no daughter, who's next? So the truth of the matter is, I didn't really answer that question, but the answer to that question is Dad is going to be next. Even though, as we went through the psukim twice this morning, he is notably absent from the list. He is only learned out through a drasha, okay? But he's there, meaning he's included in the Yerusha. Not only is he there, but he's very close, actually. He is in front of the surviving brothers. Why should that be? So we're in the middle of explicating that point. And then in the event that there's no father, so then the brother's going to inherit. And then from there, you just simply go to whoever's next along paternal lines. The Mishnah gave us four categories of Yerusha, meaning sometimes you have a familiar relationship where Yerusha can work in both directions. And categories 2 and 3 is where it only works in one direction. 2 and 3 are really just mirror images of one another. We're just looking at it from the other person's perspective. The Gemara is going to make that point. They're not really two separate categories. It's really the same category, just looking at it from two different perspectives. And finally, category number 3 is that we can be related, but there's not going to be Yerusha in either direction, and that is notably a maternal relationship. Let's say that we are brothers, but only through moms, not through dads. So under those circumstances, there's no Yerusha. Now, the Gemara's discussion is, why did the Mishnah start off with the case of the father inheriting his son's estate? Meaning that the son died and he had no surviving children. So the dad inherits his Yerusha. Why did the Mishnah start there? That is tragic, and it's not where the Torah starts. So the Gemara's answer is because we learn it out through a drasha. And what we started to do today, which we're going to continue to do tomorrow, is where's the drasha? Meaning, how do we know that dad inherits his son? Where is that derived from? So we know it comes from a drasha. Where's the drasha? So right now, the Gemara learns it out from the word she'ero. She'ero is an encryption of the father. The father is going to inherit. Where is he placed in the succession? That's what we're discussing right now. We know that the dad comes after the sons, meaning the children of the deceased. And we know that based on various halachic realities where we clearly see the son is a stand-in for the father. So, but meanwhile, we don't find anywhere in halacha that the father is a stand-in for the son. Now, we noted that Yibum is a little bit strange because Yibum, a brother, does stand in for another brother. We will continue to discuss that tomorrow in terms of what do we do with that halachic reality.